broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brian behind the glass. Joe George out here at East River 9 doing a little double duty, doing his radio show and then engineering our show. So thank you to Joe for doing that. Great time, beautiful day. Beautiful day to play a little bit of golf at East River 9. Beautiful day to be out on the range. Beautiful day to play a little bit of pickleball. Beautiful day to hang out with us, have a beer, have a bite. Chicken sandwiches are fantastic. You can also watch. I thought it was going to be a great day to watch golf. That's still the case. Thought it was going to be a great day to watch baseball. That is not the case. Hunter Brown, terrible. Astros, not doing very good.
Yeah, not exactly what the doctor ordered, will doctor or otherwise. When you look at what they've been through pitching-wise, how many of the arms they've had to use in the bullpen, the fact that starters of late, whether it be what Arrigetti couldn't give you last night or the other night with Henley, you're looking at this right now thinking, Hunter Brown, find it. And instead, I think he's breaking records for, I think, Major League Baseball in terms of the amount of hits for less than an inning completed and runs given up. That first inning was atrocious, and now it's just a bleep show where they're just trying to make it respectable.
Astros lost yesterday. They're more than likely going to lose today. First pitch at 6:05, but they're losing 9-3 right now. Astros are going to drop to 6 games below 500 if they hold on to lose this game, which would be the first time they've done that since 2016. So you're talking uncharted waters when you're talking about the Houston Astros. The Astros have not been – everybody, well, it's early. There's still a lot of season to play. That is true, but the Astros have never been 6 games under 500 in the golden era of Houston Astro baseball. So, yes, it's early, but, yes, it's also uncharted territory for this era of the Stros.
It really is, and you know, there's tons of people all over the place pointing fingers, asking questions. Who's responsible? How do you fix it? I don't know, but you got to start pointing fingers, and you got to start trying to get these guys, squeezing them for answers, because Dana Brown's got to get to work, because, you know, you didn't prepare for as many injuries as you knew about were going to be lingering into this season with Garcia, with McCullers type things. You didn't expect Verlander was going to go down, but really the options that you had right now didn't look like they were going to be great. Hunter Brown, that's just, I mean, I know he's been working on things. Boy, that curveball was sitting just belt high, ready to get ripped today, and it did. And the offense has been less than, for in certain cases where you've spent a lot of money or could spend a lot of money or guys you rely on. It has been a comedy of errors to start the season for your Houston Astros.
You say Dana needs to get to work. What do you suggest?
I mean, he's got to start talking to teams across the league and just trying to figure out, you know, who's available. Are there starters that are available if he needs a starter? Are there bats available because of what we talked about yesterday with Abreu and the fact that Abreu and Singleton combined are even worse than the thought of how much money you spent to get nothing out of Abreu. Singleton shouldn't be on this roster. They need to make changes that way. They need to start trying to do whatever they can do to give this team a better chance to win, because right now it's obviously no one's getting it done.
I don't think teams are going to be in the market of trading right now, though.
Like, probably right.
I think Dana Brown's pretty limited on things that he can do. Brandon Belt's out there. There's not a decent pitcher that's out there. I've looked.
Yeah, Zach Greinke doesn't exactly float anybody's boat.
Yeah, so I don't know like what Dana Brown can do. Now, if you want to say that Dana Brown missed an opportunity
that's
in the offseason, you can absolutely say that. We had our wish list of things that we wanted from Dana Brown, and he didn't do anything, really. Instead of going with some quality arms, he went with one major arm. And quite frankly, I think that was a Jim Crane move. I think that was bigger than a Dana Brown move. Maybe Dana Brown's a yes man. So it begs the question, why do the Astros suck? Why are the Astros going to be 6 games below 500 for the first time since 2016? Why are the Astros giving up 10 runs a game? Why are the Astros bad? Why are they bad? In one, like not one word, but one answer. Why do the Astros stink at baseball right now? 713-780-3776.
Is it one word?
No, not one word. I just said that.
I know. I'm saying, but can I just give one name?
Sure. Yeah.
Alex
you can
Abreu.
One word if you want. Yeah, just one reason why.
Alex Abreu.
Alex Abreu?
Because it's a combination of Bregman and Abreu who are doing nothing with runners in scoring position, or in the case of Abreu, absolutely nothing at all. And when you look at what this team has not done with runners in scoring position and how many times Bregman in particular has come up with runners in scoring position. It is a sad state of affairs, especially when you talk about, in his regard, a guy that's trying to bet on himself to try and get a big contract at the end of the year.
Yeah, to me, and I'll go with half of that. Like, you know, Alex Bregman has struggled in some big spots. He had the base load one out in the first inning today and grounded into a double play. The answer that I have is that you're using a lot of players who aren't very good. Like, I think that the Astros are a good baseball team. I think that they're going to be relatively fine. I think they'll figure all this out. I think this is kind of just a little bit of a blip in the radar. I think they're going to be okay. But they're playing a lot of players that probably shouldn't be on a good big league baseball team. I'll say a good big league baseball team. Jose Abreu, you mentioned him. Jose Abreu has played in 12 games, and he's had 41 plate appearances. He's not a player that I think should be getting that many plate appearances on a good big league team. Chaz, I think, is fine. Jake, I think, is fine to be on the roster. Dubon, I think, is fine. How about John Singleton? John Singleton, 17 plate appearances. That's not counting today on a supposedly good Major League Baseball team. That shouldn't be the case. Gray Kessinger doesn't play a ton, but he's appeared in 4 games. He doesn't belong on a roster of a good baseball team. So you have 3 players offensively that just jump out at you that really don't belong on a good baseball team. You look over at the pitching, I think Spencer Arrighetti is going to end up being a capable starting pitcher in the bigs. I think he'll be a number 3, number 4 starter, probably more of a number 4 starter. Should he be in the bigs right now? Probably not. 3 innings from Spencer Arrighetti. We've seen Seth Martinez has been fine. Taylor Scott has actually been pretty good. Never heard of Taylor Scott prior to this season, so maybe you can say Taylor Scott. Brandon Bielak, maybe you can say Brandon Bielak, who's actually been a workhorse for you and has been able to eat some innings. Parker Mashinsky, he's appeared in 3 games, doesn't belong on a big league team. Dylan Coleman appeared in 1 game, does not belong on a big league team. Miguel Diaz, Blair Hindley, Wander Suero. How many guys do we mention there, 7 or 8?
Yeah.
The Astros have played, not have rostered, the Astros have played 7 or 8 guys that don't belong on a good Major League Baseball team. The roster construction of this team was something that we were looking at, but we thought they were going to be good enough that they could overcome it. We didn't like the bench. We didn't like the middle relief. The middle relief isn't doing awful, but some names there that have no business being on a big league team. But that's just too many players that aren't big league worthy.
No, you're absolutely right, Jeremy. I mean, when you look at it, and you know, we have talked about in the past, and I've gone off on Nick Caserio and his inability to prepare for what the offensive line went through a year ago, specifically when you knew Kenyon Green was going to get hurt. He even said it was a when, not an if, he would get hurt, and he didn't prepare. This is so much worse because of the fact that what he basically was saying to you, and we don't know how much his hands were tied, but as the general manager, you have to be able to do general manager things. And you know that you are banking heavily on your starters, not only playing a majority of the time based on who was on the bench, but living up to standards, playing to a certain level statistically and otherwise. And there obviously wasn't enough preparation for the fact that some of these guys, whether you want to believe this whole, hey, you know what, Abreu's a traditionally slow starter, or that some of these guys just all of a sudden might not live up to where they've been, even though Bregman showed you signs even last year, he wasn't nearly what he was, you know, the last several, when he was, you know, all the way back to 19 when he's an MVP candidate. There wasn't enough preparation and there wasn't enough done to this roster to give them other viable options should one or more, in this case, be either less than stellar in their abilities or be hurt.
Yeah, it's they find themselves in a spot. 713-780-ESPN. Why do the Astros suck? 713-780-3776. That's the bad news of sports today. So the Astros are going to lose again and be 6 games under 500 for the first time since 2016. The good news is the Masters are going on, so that's a lot of fun. And Tiger Woods is birdie number 1, so there is that.
And if that happens, I mean, if he just stays consistently doing those kind of things, the entire world, and even in Houston, is probably going to pause on the Astros for a little bit and pay a whole lot of attention to Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah, I wonder.
He's such a draw, man.
Yeah, he is. But, I mean, you can kind of, I think, compartmentalize the two.
Yeah.
3667, I kept saying it all winter. We need starters. Everyone told me I was crazy, didn't know baseball. Our starting 5 on the IL, I wish I was wrong. See, I don't think that you needed starters. I think you just needed big league capable pitchers.
Arms, yeah.
And you can make the case that, like, signing Hader to the big deal wasn't the way to go about it. Maybe instead of signing a Hader, you sign 2 quality arms.
Yeah, no, look, you and I talked about it because we didn't at the time think about the fact that Hader was going to be a realistic option for this team, and we had been basically led to believe they weren't going to want to spend a ton of money like they did on Hader. But if you were going to take that money and spend it a different way, obviously you could have added two good arms to the bullpen and maybe still had enough for a bat and probably still wouldn't be close to what you paid for Josh Hader when you already had one of the better closers in baseball going into this season no matter what else you did.
Why are the Astros bad? 713-780-3776. Key from L.A., I told you, B-Ham, your best player is old and the other is overrated. Is he calling Yordan Alvarez overrated? Is that what he's saying?
I don't know how you can do that because the two players that I don't think that I'd question right now are Altuve and Yordan.
Yeah, Yordan's not overrated.
And Yiner.
That's a bad call. And Yiner's probably not in that conversation.
No.
You know, like best player.
Right.
Like, no, I don't think that's the case. Why are the Astros bad? Uncle Barney says five starters on the injured list. And probably, I mean, the starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. Frommer, Justin Verlander, Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy. That's a pretty good rotation. That rotation can win you a World Series.
Yeah, that dog
would
hunt
you a World Series
for just about any team in baseball and give you a good chance to be a playoff team with a chance to go deep.
Yeah, Verlander hopefully back soon. Frommer were still kind of unknown. They said a starter two, probably two. Who knows? We haven't been given official word. Jose Urquidy, they're saying, is going to be throwing on a mound soon. And then Luis Garcia, Lance McCullers isn't until the summer. So you still have a lot of innings before you're whole again. Hunter Brown today, 9 runs on 11 hits in 2/3 of an inning. I wonder if they were on him. Like, that's a lot of damage just if you, like, don't have his stuff. If you don't have his signs and you put up 9 runs on 11 hits, that's kind of crazy. Like, a lot of times in slow-pitch softball, you don't get 9 runs on 11 hits in a single inning. I wonder if they were on him. I wonder if they had something.
It's true, and I hear what you're saying, and it is a possibility. But when I watched a lot of the pitches they were hitting, that slow curveball was sitting belt high.
I was just listening. I didn't see it. It was bad.
It was really bad. I mean, you know, it's one of the things where you're trying to throw a 12-6 or you're trying to get kind of that kind of movement on the ball. And it was just – it was at 12, and then it was sitting at about 3 o'clock, and Royals hitters were just staying on the back foot and just unloading on it and driving line drive after line drive through the infield. If that's the pitch he's been working on, it needs more work.
713-2, hey, Killer Bees, Branham and Blank. The Astros are 6 games below .500 because the Astros owner and you, Killer Bees, and other local Houston sports media drove the Astros' great manager, Dusty Baker, out of town and into retirement. How are your Killer Bees liking the post-Dusty Baker Houston Astros now baseball emoji? Dusty Baker retired. He wanted to see his family. Dusty Baker flat out said that. Like, we ignored that Dusty Baker said, I want to spend time with my family, because he made a little subtle comment about how he's tired of people questioning his decisions. If he retired because of Houston media, then he is super soft. But I don't think Dusty Baker retired because of that. He threw it as in, like, he was asked about something. He threw it as, like, just a secondary remark, secondary comment. I don't love this aspect of my job. But he said the reason he retired was to be with his family. So are we not going to believe Dusty Baker?
No, I mean, it's ridiculous because of the fact that he said before he took the Astros job, he thought he was done managing in baseball. The Astros, the entire situation intrigued him. They made him an offer he couldn't refuse financially. He had success and got the ultimate pinnacle that was missing from his resume in a World Series championship. And at a certain point at his age, with all the things that you mentioned, he decided it was time to walk away. Whether that was in part because he didn't like all the stress and all the BS and all the stuff he had to deal with the media, or not because he made a just in the totality, he walked away. This isn't on Joe Espada. We just got done telling you where they didn't do enough and didn't put enough on this roster to be able to adjust and be more versatile should you run into one injuries or two less than stellar performances from guys you're counting on. Yep. And that's where Dana Brown comes in.
Someone said fire Espada, so I do think that it's out there. I know looking at Twitter today, some people think that Espada's at fault. 713-780-ESPN. Why do the Astros stink right now? 713-780-3776. Busy show. We're at East River 9. Come hang out with us. 713-780-3776. What is the headline of the Houston Astros, I guess, losing streak, getting swept in Kansas City? Busy show. Killer G's had an issue with something that we said.
Oh, really?
We'll respond to their response. Who's the Texans' number one wide receiver? And it is a Thursday on the Killer B's, so that means Bad Take Boulevard. What are the worst takes of the week? 713-780-3776. Why do the Astros stink? Time to send Hunter Brown back to Sugar Land. question mark? And what Astros' concern from spring training or the offseason do you have the most fear about not getting fixed and being a problem right now? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at doing the NeoGraft procedure. But look, there's many different ways that you can get your hair back or preserve the hair that you have and get thicker, fuller hair. If you want to try the PRP without doing the full NeoGraft is a way to rejuvenate and get more hair growth out of the hair that you already have on your head. If you're losing your hair at a rapid rate and you don't think there's any way you can get it back, the NeoGraft might be the way to go for you. Genetically, you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head. Doc Linville takes some of that, puts it where you need it most, and you start seeing the results instantly. In 6 to 9 months, you can get a lot of your hair back in a short period of time. All you got to do as an ESPN 97.5 listener is go to 975hair.com because you don't have to pay for your first consultation. You can ask questions, get answers, and find out if the NeoGraft is right for you, too. I did it. I could not be happier with it. The fact of the matter is Doc is best. When he explained everything to me and then started to kind of show me the path to the results, and then once I did the procedure, I couldn't believe how amazing it was and how painless it could be. Check it out because you could be next in line. No commitments, no signing on the dotted line or money out of pocket, just questions and answers that may put you right where I was getting my hair back at 975hair.com.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from East River 9, watching the Masters. Tiger Woods birdied one, but he's up against a tree on his drive off of two. Bryson DeChambeau is your early leader, 7 under through 17. He's wrapping up his day today. I picked him with my last
you
pick.
You did.
In the Killer Bee draft, Killer Bee Masters draft. Danny Willett, 4 under. Young Hun Un is -4. Victor Hovland, -4 as well. I will say this before we switch it back to Astros. Why do the Astros stink? 713-780-3776. If you were one of the early tee times today, you got the good end of the draw because you got to take advantage of soft conditions. And just looking up now, the wind started to pick up in Augusta.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, sometimes you're just lucky. And when you get any weather coming into a golf tournament, there are times when the luck of the draw goes your way because you're right. I mean, with that course, the way it was set up and the way even Will Doctor was talking to us about what they were working on yesterday and how hard those greens were, that rain did a whole lot of good for those groups coming off after it. And then once the wind gets going, the sun starts coming out, it starts drying out. Boy, it looks like guys are really struggling in the later rounds.
Early draw is the way to go. All right, why do you think the Astros stink right now? 713-780-3776. 3667, I can't believe we're this bad right now. We have Jake Myers, exclamation point. What more do you need? Question mark, exclamation point, question mark. LMAO, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Jake Myers hasn't been bad, though.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting him to be what he was in spring training, and that wasn't realistic. I think he's been okay. You know, I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but even I have been complimentary of, like, some of the at-bats, some of the way he's played so far at this point in the season. By any stretch of the imagination, when you start pointing the fingers at what's wrong with this team, you got to go a little bit of a ways down the list before you start bringing Jake Myers into the conversation.
Ocho, actually, before Ocho, it's 8711. Joe has lost the locker room with some game decisions. What game decisions do you think Joe has made that has lost the clubhouse?
I mean, as much as you have to go, if Abreu isn't your guy, then you have to go with the guy that's supposed to be his backup. And if Singleton's awful, then that's on the GM. But, yes, he's played Singleton maybe more. I understand a couple of times he used some of his high leverage back of the bullpen relievers in situations that – maybe less than ideal for a lot of managers to make that move, especially early in the year. But overall, it's kind of hard to point a whole lot of fingers at Joe Espada.
Yeah, he's used he's used Singleton a fair amount, and he's pinch hit for Abreu, and he's moved him down to the eight spot. There's some things I've noticed with Espada that I'm like, okay, let's see if this is a habit that continues that I haven't liked. But I'm not blaming anything on Espada, and I think losing the clubhouse is borderline ridiculous. The thing that interests or kind of fascinates me, using Taylor Scott yesterday to get the final out in a blowout game was silly to me. Like, why are you burning that guy? Use Victor Caratini. Use Mauricio Dubon. Use a position player that's willing to get an out for you. It doesn't matter at that point. the
significantly because Scott's pitching today.
Exactly. Like, why did you use him yesterday? That to me didn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's a minor thing. That's not major.
Right.
The other day, whenever he had Christian Javier on the mound and his outfield alignment was Jordan in left, Dubon in center, Chaz in right, maybe that's a day that you have your outfield whenever Fromber's pitching. But maybe because Fromber got hurt, that's why he went with that outfield with Javier. So there's little things like that that I've noticed that I'm not crazy about. Continue to bat John Singleton above like the rest of the lineup is weird to me too. So I don't think Espada to me hasn't gotten off to a great start, but I don't think Espada is a bad manager yet.
You accurately said. I mean, you know, he's his first game as a manager. Maybe he managed it more like a World Series game. Jake Myers had a home run early, and he pinch hit for him in like the sixth inning when you wanted to see maybe some people wanted to see another at bat out of Jake Myers. But overall, yeah, you can nitpick little things. But again, when you start saying what's wrong with this team and why are they so bad, I think that Jake Myers and Joe Espada are a decent amount down that list.
Yeah, same. Ocho, the Astros stink because they're not fundamentally sound. They don't do anything well, and they don't have championship habits, and they don't have team meals at Luby's that include strawberry jello. The Astros have made some plays that are not fundamentally sound. Today in that first inning, they overthrew the cutoff man twice. That led to an extra base. Like, that's not fundamentally sound. I can't really think of a lot of other instances, though. Like, maybe not doing the, you know, the team at bat, hitting the ball to the right side, sacrifice fly, stuff like that.
It might have been the Yankee series with the one that really got out of way late, get out of hand late, when they tried to flip the double play ball, Pena threw it away. There was a couple of plays where they were trying to get forces, and maybe the throw was a little bit off. But, yeah, again, not like it's a significant thing that you could point to and say, I mean, and Espada was your guy forever and a day that was responsible for the defense and working with the infielders before he took the job as the manager. I don't think the defense has been that big of a problem.
No, I think it's more. I mean, I really only saw that today, the overthrows to cut off men. Garrick, the Abreu, Montero, McCullers contracts are albatrosses around the Astros' necks right now. Without those contracts, the Astros probably still have Victor Neris. Could have still signed Hader and then signed a starting pitcher along with a quality bat. I do think there is, I mean, there's some truth to that. Abreu's contract, $19.5 million, awful. Montero's, what, $11.5 million?
11 plus,
that's,
yeah.
That's $30 million right there a year. That's $30 million a year. Now, Montero's been better this year, but would you rather have $30 million and not have Montero and Abreu? Yeah,
sure.
You would. The McCullers one, to me, is just kind of, to me, that one's unlucky. Like, he actually gave you a hometown discount and signed for well below market value, but he got hurt. Should the Astros have known he was going to get hurt? I think it's a fair question.
Well, the other thing, too, Jeremy, is if when we think about it with Lance McCullers, we both agree, if he's right, his stuff is top three in a rotation type stuff in baseball, and he's capable of getting any major league hitter out. It's just that they were also betting on the fact that at some point he was going to regain his health, and once he got it, he was going to keep it, and that hasn't been the case, and that's what pigeonholed you, because he is getting a sweetheart of a deal based on ability, but based on injuries, it's what everybody wants to criticize.
1565, no clubhouse leader.
I disagree with that, too. You know what? People look at a clubhouse leader as a guy that's got to be George Springer, that's got to be, like, you know, vocal and demonstrative and you know, feisty. But I believe that behind the scenes, between Verlander and Altuve and Bregman and the veterans that they have on this team, I don't believe that that's an issue.
We were hearing stories about how Jordan's emerged into a leader, too. I think the leader, like, commentary is easy to go to when you're losing games.
Sure.
I think it's really kind of lazy. Like, you're telling me that team with that many great players doesn't have leadership? Verlander, like you said, Verlander has the ability to lead. Altuve leads. You know, he's not the most vocal or demonstrative, but I think he is in the clubhouse when he needs to be. Yeah, the leadership one to me is that's a sensitive topic to me because of the whole Carlos Correa thing. When Carlos Correa left the Houston Astros, there was people on the radio still in the city. They're never going to overcome the leadership of Carlos Correa. They won a World Series the very next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's such BS, but right now everything is low-hanging fruit, and the lowest of low-hanging fruit that people want to jump on is the easiest targets, which means you just changed managers, it's got to be Joe Espada, which means that, you know, you're going to sit there and you're going to nitpick things like, you know, clubhouse and leadership and the things where you don't really want to be realistic about some of the things that were the hot buttons even a year ago, that without a general manager, the owner and his, you know, his list of cronies that were involved in decisions made three really bad decisions, because the Brantley decision luckily was only for a year, but it was awful, and the Montero and the Abreu contracts were silly the way they've planned out. And then on top of that,
that's why. But just real quick, by the way, that's why you sign short-term deals. Like, even though the Brantley deal, like, obviously didn't get great return on that investment, it doesn't hurt you. It's 1 year.
That's right. You can get out from under it easily. But now you're sitting there with this one plus one more for both Montero. And Montero's been good this year so far.
Yeah, he's still overpaid, though. Yeah,
he's way overpaid, but at least he's getting results. Abreu's got this one and another one, and he has been not even worthy of AAA baseball right now the way he's playing. And that's very, very painful to watch.
I mean, it's a legitimate conversation. Is it better to pay him to go sit on his couch? That's a legitimate conversation right now with Jose Abreu before he's halfway through this contract. Would the Astros be better off as a team in terms of winning games? Because you have to pay them either way.
Right.
You have to either pay Jose Abreu to keep playing, or you have to pay Jose Abreu to go sit on his couch. What would give the Astros more wins? Jose Abreu playing or Jose Abreu sitting on his couch? I think it's the latter.
Yeah.
I think it makes more sense to pay him to sit on his couch.
I think that if you just want to give one more for a multiple choice, at least sit him on the bench and be just a guy that comes in pinch hit situations from time to time. If you say that's while he's getting right, fine. You still have to pay him, yes, but maybe because he has been a legit major league hitter for several years, maybe there is a sliver of hope that he can find it. But then in the meantime, go find a legitimate first baseman in Major League Baseball. You mentioned the one that
is still out there. I think there's only one.
In Brandon Belt. But you can go get a guy like that and make him your starter until you figure out long and short term what you want to do with Jose Abreu. And dare I say it, Jose Abreu at least might be better than John Singleton off your bench.
Yeah, which is kind of sad that, like, you're right, that can be like the happy medium between paying him to play versus paying him to sit on his couch. If you give me the option between the two, I'm paying him to sit on his couch. But the happy medium might be because you have a bad bench, well, he could just be a guy that's on the bench that maybe starts every now and then against lefties because you have a bad bench.
And, Jeremy, that's reflective of Dana Brown, because if you're looking at your bench and saying putting Abreu on the bench may make your bench better than it is right now, then your general manager didn't do a very good job of making sure your bench was capable.
The one defense I'll give Dana Brown when it comes to that, and look, I'd rather have James Click general managing this team. I think that was a sin, running off James Click like that. I think that he did a lot of good for the – I mean, he won a World Series as the general manager. Yiner Diaz is on this baseball team, looks like the catcher of the future. And we're talking about his bat being so good, maybe he's the first baseman of the future for the Houston Astros. The one thing that I will defend with when it comes to Dana Brown is I wonder if he's just kind of a yes man. And Jim Crane said, look, we don't want to spend crazy money. The only way we're going to spend money is if Kendall Graveman gets hurt and we sign the best reliever that's in free agency. And they didn't give him the resources necessary to add to that bit. And I'm not calling Jim Crane cheap. Obviously, his payroll is very high. We could talk about his management of money with these certain players. We just talked about Montero. We just talked about Abreu. I like Josh Hader. Maybe it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to join Josh Hader to $18.5 million when you have other holes in the middle of your team. So that's the only defense I'll give Dana Brown. I don't like the way that this roster was constructed to come into the season. Is that because Dana Brown just wasn't good at his job? Or is that because Jim Crane said, look, we're not going to go over the luxury tax unless we get a really good player?
I think that there's truth in a lot of that. I think that what I would say is we don't know until we know what exactly goes on behind the scenes. But if, in fact, Dana Brown, I would think as a general manager, had some kind of plan, and maybe even to the point where Jim Crane said, this is the kind of money I'm comfortable, you know, spending and using to go get players, and then all of a sudden, because I'm the owner, at any time I can throw a wrinkle into all that and tell you, this is a guy I want to go get, and that changes everything. And when he went and got Hader, maybe that changed his approach to what he was possibly going to be able to do, because if you're going to handcuff your general manager to that extent.
That came late, though.
It did.
That
you're
came
right.
late. So because it's like the timing on that doesn't add up to me, because I think they would have handled that other stuff prior to that.
The only thing that you can say about the timing is that maybe because that there wasn't a lot, I'm sure they were in contact with agents, but maybe because there wasn't a level of interest that they thought they might be able to get cheaper deals for guys they were looking at. And I'm sure they had multiple options at different guys, whether it be a relief pitcher, arms, or a bat. But regardless, you run just because exactly what you said about Click, too. At the end of the day, the variable you can't control is the guy that signs the checks and makes the decisions. And so what we don't know is Dana truly handcuffed on everything and he is just, you know, out there in front doing things for the owner? Or is it at a certain point you can't control the owner, and if he doesn't like you because he doesn't get along with you, then you're gone in the case of Click. Yeah. And if he's enamored with you because you're a big name in baseball like Verlander or Hader, he's going to throw a monkey wrench into your plan and go get who he wants no matter what.
Yeah, see, that's like we don't know what happened in the offseason. Now, we can say the Astros as a whole failed. Yeah, we can say that. But in terms of, like, is it Crane? Is it Dana Brown? It's hard to tell. 0754, who are you putting in at first base? I think there's a couple options if you want to spend a little bit of money. Brandon Belt. I think Joey Loperfito would give you better at-bats than Jose Abreu, although I don't think he's ready. If you want to go on the big league team, I think Mauricio Dubon in a pinch it would be better than Jose Abreu, as sad as that is to say, because Mauricio Dubon's a high-contact, low-slugging kind of guy. And then I think Yiner Diaz would be a better option at first base, too, and then you just catch Victor Caratini. So there's multiple options. None of them are great, but they're better than what you got.
But manage the situation, right? Maybe it's just the short term that you're focused on and trying to bridge a gap while you see if Abreu can get right. Well, maybe Loperfino can get more at-bats to where he can convince everybody it's not just boom or bust and that he can have better at-bats that translate more to the major leagues. But in the meantime, if you have capable hitters that are better than what you're currently putting out there at first base and it doesn't hurt the rest of your lineup, you need to start doing that in the short term until you figure out what you want to do in the long term.
King of Twitch, Joe should quit going for it on fourth down. Todd the show, Espada hasn't brought Chaz banana pudding once. Maybe that's what it takes. Have a good clubhouse. 713-780-ESPN, HRNP listener line. Killer Bees broadcasting live from East River 9 on the banks of the Buffalo Bayou. All right, the Killer G's have issues with the Killer Bees. Take on Alex Bregman. What did they say? How big of idiots are they? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We're watching the Masters. We're having fun at East River 9. It's a beautiful day. Good food, good drink, good time. Come hang out with the Killer Bees. Come here to East River 9. Watch all of your Masters. Tiger Woods somehow par 5-2, but he was up against a tree on his drive. And you said he flew the green on his
approach. And short-sighted himself on his I think third shot, but somehow he got up and down.
Bryson DeChambeau leading at 7-under, Danny Willett at 4-under, Ryan Fox amongst several golfers at 3-under, Fox, Hunan, Zalatoris, Fitzpatrick, Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Cameron Davis, all at 3-under. So the Killer G's had some, it took some issue to what we were saying about Bregman going into business for himself. Here was the Killer G's, Gallant and George, earlier, live from East River 9, talking about us talking about that.
I want to start with the Joel part first.
What?
My biggest issue with Joel's argument is that it's very flawed.
Hit him.
And the fact that this is not the first time he's done this. February 5th, 2021, MLB.com, Brian McTaggart. Story and video. Alex Bregman adds 27 pounds and is eager to put 2020 behind him. This is an issue I have with Alex Bregman. It goes back to the tinkering thing where he's putting on 25, 27 pounds in these different years. And it's just, he just doesn't know what he wants with his body, with his swing. But, like, this isn't the first time that he has gone out of his way to add significant muscle mass and power to his swing. So, fundamentally, that part of the argument is very flawed. But I know you don't like this either.
Yeah. Okay, he's in his last year with the team, but now he's about himself. Okay, well, I mean, that's how contracts work. But the criticism of Bregman as well, I don't understand why it's happening right now. He always gets off the slow starts, but the last three games, he's 6-for-14 with three doubles. It is fair to say that things are picking up, and yeah, he had the bad throw over first base. There was a foul ball he didn't caught. He also threw a guy out at home. I'm not singling out Alex Bregman as the target of my ire because he's in the midst of a contract year.
So that was the Killer G's with their thoughts on our thoughts about Alex Bregman. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just using the noisemakers that a certain Joe George likes to use now that, you know, he's on the show before us. I mean, look, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of I don't care if he's put the muscle on before. What I care about is he's always had a great eye and approach at the plate. He's always been a guy with runners in scoring position that can take the ball the other way. The fact that he's done this before and maybe he had some success doesn't matter to me because the fact that he's doing it now again, it almost reeks of desperation trying to chase money instead of trying to do and get back to doing what he's done so successfully when he has hit the ball well because he's not the power hitter he once was. So when I hear that, I'm like, okay, great. I mean, if that's what – it's fine. I stand by what I said because of the fact that I don't think that when you go into your contract year and you put on 23 pounds yet again, if you've done it in the past, and you're, that screams to me that you're trying to become something that I don't think you can be anymore, which is a power hitter and trying to hit more bombs as opposed to polishing what you do so well.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some me, not we here when it comes to Alex Bregman. And I really think that Joe was actually proving the point on the added muscle mass. Joe sided whenever he did it in 2021. 2021, he played the fewest games he's ever played in his career outside of the COVID year and outside of the year that he got called up. It was also his worst OPS in his career. So he does have history of doing this, and the history of him doing this led to the worst season he's ever had in his career. And why is he doing it? He's talked about how he wants to hit the ball out of the yard.
Yeah.
And he's not a guy who can hit the ball out of the yard. So that's example one. Several other things that were said here. Paul said that he wasn't under contract. I get that he's in the final year of his contract, but he's under contract. Yeah. He's being paid handsomely, by the way. He's getting paid $30 million. So do I want Alex Bregman to go after a little foul ball near the dugout with a little bit more urgency? Yeah, I do. He's getting paid $30 million. He's been given a contract by the Houston Astros. He just hasn't been given a new contract by the Astros, but it doesn't mean that he's like overworked and underpaid. He's making $30 million a season. Also, and he said there was only one example that we pointed to. No, we didn't. We pointed to three examples that day. There was four plays he made in the game that cost the Astros the game 2 days ago. One of them was a throwing error. Like, that wasn't lazy. That was just a bad play. So I can't use that as, like, an example of Bregman going into business for himself. But we cited three plays in that game. The first inning, he came up with the bases loaded and nobody out because he wants to go yard all the time. He popped it up on the infield. He had first and third with one out in the fourth inning and hit a ground ball into a double, or he struck out actually that time. It was the double play with the bases loaded today. Do a
first
job,
inning.
Man. Yep. Like, Alex Bregman is a good hitter. He's not what he once was. Alex Bregman's a good hitter. Alex Bregman has a great eye. Alex Bregman can do a job. I've seen Alex Bregman in those situations, bases loaded, less than two outs, runners on the corners, less than two outs, routinely do a job. What is he doing this year in a contract year? Not doing a job.
Jeremy, we're not asking him defensively either to be Derek Jeter and jump headfirst into the stands to try and make a play, to try and throw his body in harm's way. We're asking him to catch a foul ball where he had 2.5 to 3 feet of room. He had the ability to go next to the wall and still make the play, and he pulled up and pulled the chute 5 steps before he got to the actual fence. Is it so much to ask that you make when you call that a team play instead of a me play or just a routine play that you have to try and make as the starting third baseman for a Major League Baseball team? I don't think that it is.
I don't think that it is either. I think it is going into business for yourself, and it was more than one example, far more than one example, and that was just in the one game. That was just in the one game, but I will start tracking it. We'll start going through all the examples all of year of when Alex Bregman is going into business for himself. Because it happened 3 times in that one game. I didn't see his at-bat today, so I don't know if he was swinging for the fences. I don't know if it was a big swing. I'll have to go back and watch it. But
it didn't look like he was trying to take the ball up the middle of the other way. Let's put it that way when I saw it. And the thing is that how many times when you look at so far this season has he left runners on scoring position when he came up in a critical moment by popping up or swinging early in the count? There's been several.
So, and you know, some could say, well, that's just a guy, you know, that's not swinging a bat right, you know, right now, which, okay, maybe that's the case. I think Alex Bregman's a pretty good professional hitter that can do a job instead of, you know, maybe trying to hit a home run every single time. You notice how many pop flies he's getting on the infield. That ain't great. But my biggest transgression with Bregman so far this year, because look, everybody has slumps at the plate. I get that. Was that effort at trying to catch a pop fly in the camera well? He started chopping it up before he was 5 feet in front of the warning track. Like, catch the ball, man. Make your 30. And, yes, you are under contract. You might not have a new contract, but you're making $30 million this year. Do I want a $30 million man to make a routine catch on a pop fly? Yes. And I'm not going to defend a dude who's lazy going at a pop fly when he's making $30 million.
Look, he is starting to hit the ball better. That's fine. But we've also seen that play out minus all the extra weight and the swinging for the fences a year ago, but he was up and down. It was more of a roller coaster than it was a steady, smooth ride. And I certainly hope that he starts figuring it out at the plate and this is the sign of things to come and that he is a slow starter this year. But you can't deny the fact that the things that he's done so far to get to this point early in the season is that he is trying to bet on himself and chase that bag.
2010, Joe will probably redact his opinion about Bregman on tomorrow's show. 5924, he says 12-3, kiss my bad word. We'll get to the other text coming up on the other side. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Killer Bees broadcasting live from East River 9. Would you rather the Astros be really good the next 2 years and really bad after that? Or what about just good for the next 7 years? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We're always looking to make better decisions whenever it comes to our drinks, right? Our cocktails, our spirits, whatever the case may be. Well, your choice should be Gentle Ben. Gentle Ben is the best. Vodka, gin, bourbon, all of those are in my rotation. What's in your rotation? Gentle Ben Spirits does it better than anybody else. How? Their revolutionary Percedo technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits you'll ever taste. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it, which includes gluten. That's right. No gluten in Gentle Ben, but Gentle Ben isn't going to brag about that. Did you know that all spirits are naturally gluten-free? That's right. Try a sip of Gentle Ben vodka, gin, straight bourbon, or cask-strength bourbon. Compare it to whatever you drink, and you will never go back. I've been a Gentle Ben man ever since I had that first sip because you get all the flavor and none of the burn. It's smooth. It's clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben inside a Minute Maid Park. Grab some Gentle Ben on the way to your seat. Watch some ball. Look for it at the liquor store. Ask for it at your favorite restaurant, your favorite bar. Head to the Gentle Ben tasting room. Or if you just want to order it online, you can do that. Go to gentleben.com. Add the whiskey. Add the vodka. Add the gin. Add the bourbon to your cart. And they'll deliver it straight to your doorstep. Gentleben.com. Gentle Ben, the secret ingredient is what's not in it.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9.
He's blank on Brandon. We are at East River 9, 713-780-ESPN. 6076, how about him yelling at Diaz on that foul ball yesterday? It looked like he said, "You could have hit me." I saw that, the little minor collision. Yeah. I didn't see Bregman say anything, though, did you?
Neither guy did.
I didn't think they said anything.
I was actually watching it going, maybe if they handle it right, you take it to the dugout or in the clubhouse. But I was watching, and I think Bregman was waiting to see if Yiner would say anything. Yiner went right to the pitcher. He made sure that everything was cool, you know, talking to the pitcher about the pitch. They did make their way into the dugout. I didn't see any interaction either way.
I didn't either. I think that he's making that up. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. 60-30, man, I'm done. I'm ready to trade these players, get some prospects. The team has slowly dwindled in power and clutch hitting. It's at the point of totally unraveling. We need to get a return. Joe Espada should not be the manager going forward. Look, first time they've been six games under 500 in the golden era of Houston Astro baseball. I'm not giving up on the team.
Okay.
I'm not making those decisions yet.
You're 14 games into a 162-game schedule, and you want to fire the manager and make wholesale changes? Like, I hope you're not making decisions in your life as drastically and quickly as you are with your baseball team, because that's absolutely just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you can't make these crazy, crazy, you know, suggestions yet. Now, I think it is fair to have a healthy disappointment and a healthy concern.
Concern, for sure.
But you're not trading everybody yet. Now, there is a conversation if it gets to a certain point when you start to have that conversation, and we're going to have it here in a second. 0997, Crane is the reason why the Astros are so bad right now. Didn't re-sign Click after the World Series, and it seemed like it was over petty personnel reasons. Crane and his cronies handed out terrible contracts, and Dana Brown so far hasn't been great at his job. I don't have a counterpoint to any of that. I think it's very well said.
I think it basically encompasses a lot of what truly is wrong with this team. When you think about it, owners can do whatever the hell they want, and we've seen it throughout sports. We've seen the Jerry Joneses and the Dan Snyders in football. We've seen the Les Alexanders and others in basketball. You see it in baseball, too, and an owner is going to do whatever the hell he wants to do, and he doesn't have to answer anybody. So we don't know what Dana Brown is going through. It's easy to point the finger at him because his job description said he's the guy that's supposed to handle personnel. But you don't know how much control the owner says about yes, no, or I don't like. I know it's probably the right move, but I want this, or I'm going to do that.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. If the Astros lose 100 games this season, does Joe Espada get fired? These are the conversations we're having.
See,
after 13 games. This stinks.
I would say that he might be the scapegoat if he gets fired.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you start with obviously there's things that you can point to in terms of a lack of the actual roster. But let's also factor in they're dealing with a whole hell of a lot of injuries, too. And that's something that you can never plan for.
If they lose 100 games, I'm firing Joe Espada. I have no problem saying that because they shouldn't lose 100 games. Like, you have a lot of good players coming back. Like, yes, if the Astros lose 100 games, yes, I would fire Joe Espada. I don't think they're going to lose 100 games.
You think it would be his fault?
Yeah, in some ways. Not all of it. Not all of it.
I think to date, I would say we've already pretty much highlighted how it's a lot of people's fault before it's Joe Espada's fault. But if you want to get late in the season and make the argument that, hey, if you lost 100 games, there's probably going to be several instances where the manager didn't do his job, then I'm fine listening to that.
Sure, yeah. But, I mean, if you lose 100 games, everybody did a poor job. Everybody did a poor job.
The whole coaching staff.
713-780-3776. So the bench had they had an interesting conversation this morning. They were talking, Lance threw out this idea, if you're still playing really bad and it rolls around to like July and it's trade deadline time, do you entertain the idea of trading Kyle Tucker, who at that point would have a year and a half left on his deal? His idea is you trade away some really good pieces, try to replenish this minor league system because you're trying to speed up the process of a rebuild to be good as quickly as you possibly can. So to repurpose the question, would you rather be really good for the next 2 years and then bad after that, or would you rather be good, not really good, but good for the next 7 years? Really good, 2 years, bad after that, good for seven straight years.
I'm going to take the fact that I still want to be really good for the next 2 years because I believe that there's still ways you can prevent being just good or bad for the time after that.
Well, that's not the option you're given.
And I know, but I'm taking the option of being really good for the next 2 years because I disagree with Lance no matter what, because right now this team isn't in rebuild mode, and you don't have to be because you still have guys under contract and significant pieces that are going to be there for more than just the next year and a half. I think that you have a chance with the middle of that lineup, even if this year goes just horribly wrong, which I still don't believe is going to be the case. But if you still have Tucker and Jordan,
you're moving the goalpost here, though.
I'm not.
You're changing the question. You get really good for 2 years, bad after that, or really good for seven. You're saying that you're going to take being really good for two because you don't think you'll be bad after that.
I think there's still a chance you can fix your way. But I still think these Astros fans, everybody's so spoiled because of the run that they've already been on and how long they've been this good, because it's not supposed to be that way, that I'll take two more sustainable years of chasing a World Series championship and then look back on it going, that was one hell of a run. No matter how bad we can be after that, this team did so much and lifted so many people and achieved so much to create what most people would say is a dynasty that a lot of fan bases never get to experience.
So you would be willing to live with
the bad
years?
Two.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll take the two.
I think it'd be pretty split here. I think it's 50-50. I don't know. I'm taking the good because I think a good team can win a World Series. Are the chances like less than? Yeah, like a really good team has a better chance to win a World Series than a good team. But good teams win the World Series all the time. So I would take the sustained winning 7 years, because I'm not giving away a World Series. We don't know how you're going to perform in the playoffs. I also think the baseball playoffs are a crapshoot, and that's why good teams win the World Series. It's not like football where you have to be this dominant team, or the NBA where you have to be this dominant team. Not the best team wins the World Series all the time. So I'm going to take the 7 years of sustained winning over the two really good years and the five bad years after that, which I think actually backs up Lance's point. Like, if you're in a spot where maybe you're out of the playoff race this year, like maybe you're out of that playoff race, Alex Bregman should be on the chopping block. Yep. He's only got, six at that point. He's only have half a season left on his deal. I would throw Kyle Tucker into that conversation. If you're way out of the race in July, because now he's got a year and a half. You want to trade him for the most that you can possibly get. You're going to get more at the deadline than you would in the offseason. And then Framber Valdez, if healthy, would have to be in that conversation as well, because he has a year and a half left on his deal. So I don't think Lance's idea, if you're way out of the race come trade deadline time, is outrageous.
I think there's another name you could throw in there.
Who's that?
Justin Verlander.
Yeah, sure.
I think Justin Verlander's a guy that got teams down the stretch are always looking for that pitcher to put him over the top. And if you're willing to, work out the finances, you could take a guy like Justin Verlander and give yourself an unbelievable boost in your pitching staff. And you could probably get something decent for him, maybe to start trying to recoup what you gave up to get him.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that would – I don't know, it's no trade deal. That would be something you have to work out. But, yeah, he was willing to accept the trade to a winning team last year.
And he wants to win.
Exactly.
So if he's on a significant losing team where he's trying to chase 300 wins too, and he still wants to experience playoff baseball, then being traded to a contender is something he probably would be open to.
Again, the Sinks were having these conversations 13 games into the year. What do you do if you're still this bad come July? If you lose 100 games, are you firing Joe Espada? We're not having those conversations yet. But if you are out of the playoff race in July, I actually agree with Lance. I actually agree with Lance. 3-7-4-7, I would prefer to be good for the next 7 years than really good for the next 2 years. Would help us as a fan base to appreciate postseason runs more and take less granted. World Series or bust was fun, but made great seasons feel like a disappointment. Please don't ever go back to 100 lost seasons. It's a good point. Like, I don't love the ring culture where, like, if you don't win the World Series, the year's a failure. Like, I don't look at last year's season as a failure. A lot of people do because you didn't win the World Series. So I agree with the texture here.
Well, and you look at it too. Mid-market teams are your best example of just even when you win, you don't win the big one. So you can be successful, you can win, but that means you get into the playoffs. Maybe you win the division a couple of times. But then you're supposed to just chalk that up as a win and then realize you didn't put enough into and weren't willing to commit finances enough to chase the actual ultimate prize. That's tough when you're, Kansas City, they did end up winning it. But if I look at the Brewers and I look growing up in Milwaukee and then seeing what Milwaukee's done over the last several years, they've always been good. But they haven't been great, and when it comes down to it, when they can be great and make ads and take on money, they won't do it.
Yeah, Adrian, I'm taking the next 7 years being good, then 2 years being great. Reason being, look at the Dodgers. How many 100-win seasons have they had recently and won a World Series? COVID year. They won the World Series in the COVID year, which is fake. We all know that. The baseball is a sport where the best team doesn't always win. I would say in football, the best team wins more often than baseball. I would say in the NBA, the best team wins more often than in baseball. Baseball at times in the postseason, coin flip. Look how many wild cards have won the World Series in the wild card era. A lot.
Yeah, you think about the argument to that rule, you're right. They're few and far between. In football, the Giants and the Packers were wild cards that were the last team to get in 1 year and ended up getting hot at the right time and found a way to win. But more times than not, you're the Chiefs. You're the Ravens had the best record in the regular season, but they went a couple rounds deep. Yeah, it's more of the rarity than it is the norm in both those other sports. In baseball, you're right. If you get hot pitching at the right time and your lineup is clicking, it's so close, the margins of error sometimes between the teams that spend the most and have the best records and the teams that just get in. You always got a fighting chance.
713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live at East River 9. Who is the Texans' number one wide receiver? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees live from East River 9 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.